G'day everyone and welcome to another episode of the Talking Dice Podcast. Whether you're a dice maker, collector or tabletop RPG lover, we've got you covered. I'm the host of the show, Aaron, author of The Crit Maker Guide to Dicecraft, now available on Amazon. Running a podcast in 2024 is an expensive business. With equipment, recording software, hosting providers and more costing us a huge sum of money, we're looking to you, our listeners, to help support the show. We've just launched a Patreon with tiers from just a couple of dollars a month and plenty of bonus content coming soon. If you're interested, check out patreon.com/talkingdice. In today's show, we're going to be chatting to George from Chicken Wizard Dice. With incredible splashes of color, graffiti and punk vibes, George is an absolute master of the Petri method. G'day, George, and thanks for being on the show today.
Oh, thank you.
George, before we chat about the fun stuff, let's chat about some of the fun stuff. I haven't chatted to too many dice makers recently who don't play some kind of role-playing game.
Yeah, I imagine it's probably like sacrilege if you're making dice and not playing some kind of role-playing game. It doesn't have to be D&D. I play D&D.
George, before we dig into that too much, I think the question that the listeners really want to know is, do you play with your own dice?
I play with the dice I don't want to sell because they're not good enough. So, yeah, all my players think I make crappy dice. I'm just like, yeah, this one's got this problem I just can't use. No, it's rubbish.
I've had the same conversation with my friends. They're like, Aaron, you're a dice maker. Where are all the beautiful dice? And we play online and they're, you know, playing with incredible dice that they've purchased. And here I am just clicking on buttons in D&D Beyond. Now, that's sacrilege, right?
It is. It's. But yeah. I'm always like, ooh, I make a set and I'm like, yeah, this is like the best set I've ever made. I'm going to keep these ones. And I'm like, oh, maybe yeah. Next time.
In our chat before the recording, George, you mentioned that you were DMing a game.
Yes.
Are you in the forever DM category or just part-time?
Yeah, like 50-50, really. So I started as a player, as most DMs would anyway. But then my DM just got a bit like wiped out by it. So I just said, yeah, I'll do it. So I've been doing it for like about 2 years, 2 to 3 years. But he says he wants to like take turns with me. So that's okay. I love playing as well, obviously. So, but I've really like hit my stride with DMing though at the moment. So I'm really into it.
It must be hard crossing the fence sometimes between DM and player.
It is a bit, but I was a massive like rules lawyer anyway. Like as soon as I only started playing D&D about 5 or 6 years ago. And as soon as I started, I got all the books and I just like sat there and read them like every night, learned all the spells, everything, got completely obsessed with it. So like I felt kind of ready to DM because I just knew most of the stuff. Yeah, I was super into the idea.
And what sort of campaigns are you DMing at the moment?
Well, I'm doing two. So I'm running Curse of Strahd. Strahd's an amazing villain. I think he's like the archetypal, like classic villain. He's terrifying. My players are terrified of him, but I'm quite like daft as a DM.
But that's the classic meme, isn't it? What players expect is this dark, edgy vampire story. And what they end up with is, you know, Monty Python versus What We Do in the Shadows.
Yeah, it's not just me who's daft as well. It's the party.
I think that's pretty much every D&D group in existence.
Yeah, that's the joy of it as well. As a DM, like you never, it never, ever, ever goes as planned. And it's always some like crazy stuff that someone's just come up with. And you're like, yes, you know, roll and, you know, see what happens. But that's the joy.
It's probably time we chat about dice, George. And I'd like to know a bit more about you as an artist, what your background is and how you got into dice making at all.
I used to write a lot and I kind of took a break from it and I found myself incredibly bored during COVID. And like just before that, I'd recently told my wife, I was like, listen, I love dice and I'm going to collect them now. It's just what I'm going to do. I was like in the car with her driving somewhere. So I got into collecting quite quickly. But then, yeah, during COVID, I just thought, well, why not? Why not? Like if I love them so much, why not start making them?
And so at that point, was it just a passing interest or were you actually considering making a business out of it?
Yeah, like it was just sheer curiosity, for sure. I never expected to make it, like it was never a plan to make a business out of it at all. It's purely just going to be a hobby.
And speaking of business, the name Chicken Wizard Dice, how did that come about?
Sadly, it's not the most interesting part of my business. It's kind of just that I really like chickens and I like wizards a lot. My mates have always just known me to like chickens. It's just like my weird little thing. I just think they're hilarious. I mean, the wizard is definitely the fantasy part of it, but I just love wizards. Oh, wizards are great. Like if I could be anything, I'd be a wizard.
And it's funny, you know, I've said the name of your business to numerous people and I've seen the logo quite a few times, but it wasn't until I saw on Instagram a large picture of your logo that it's actually a chicken wizard inside the anarchy symbol.
Yeah, that's right. But you're not the first to not know that it's a chicken wizard to look at it, which concerns me slightly. But yeah, so also that my brother designed the logo. He's a designer. So I'm very lucky to have some really creative family. But I made a really like basic one, and then he just like turned it into this like other one. And then another friend of mine who's a designer also helped with it. So it's very collaborative, which is super cool.
So it sounds like you've got a few artists around you in your social group.
Yeah, that's totally like, yeah, my social circles, musicians and artists. That's the type of people I hang out with for sure.
And mentioning that, I can't help but think about my home city, Melbourne, and there's a huge amount of, you know, art and music types around. And there's also a huge amount of street art and graffiti. And I can't help but, when I look at your dice, getting a real feeling of that inner city grunge type vibe.
Well, yeah, Liverpool is a super creative city as well. It's really known for its music for obvious reasons, like the Beatles. But it's just not, even people who aren't my friends, you walk down the street, you're going to bump into like five artists and musicians. It's just the way it is. So yeah, it's part of the culture. And I think, yeah, like I'd feel weird not doing something creative. Sadly, though, I wouldn't say there's a lot of great street art. Like, there's not a lot of great graffiti in Liverpool. There's a lot of tags, you know, which aren't super interesting. There is, like, some Banksy stuff, which is, like, you know, I love Banksy. I think, you know, he's an excellent social commentator. But it's not really visually gripping, I guess. So, yeah, I guess, really, like, it's more from, like, fantasy and like imagination that my style comes from, I think. Just like I've always loved reading fantasy novels. It's just that arena of the mind where you just like envisage these spells and everything. That's just, yeah, that's really always what grips me. It's just like, you know, have you played the new Baldur's Gate?
Yeah, I was actually playing that today.
Oh, really? So good, isn't it? But the way the spells look in that, like they've really captured like how I love thinking about spells. And I think it is more just because I'm a big fantasy nerd that I get all these colors in. It's like I'm creating little spells, you know, in my dice.
Yeah, and I love that idea of using that as inspiration. I mean, you know, what does a poison cloud look like? Or, you know, how do I turn Eldritch Blast into a set of dice?
Yes, or like a potion of haste or something, you know? Yeah.
Looking at your dice and the anarchy symbol there, which now I know is a chicken wizard, I can't help but get this whole post-punk vibe from your dice. And I don't know whether that's musical inspiration or just, you know, the environment around you.
It's definitely quasi-political. Well, you know, I'm very left-wing, for sure. And so, sadly, we've got the right-wing government at the moment. So anti-establishment is definitely on my mind a lot.
Yeah.
So, yeah, like, I do, you know, I do love, like, the punk attitude, for sure. Like, I like messiness. I like aggressive, like throwing things at the wall and just kind of seeing how it goes, just like, you know, high energy, for sure.
And that 100% comes through in your dice. I love the chaos and the excitement in them.
Thanks.
But, you know, back to that concept of just throwing things at the walls and seeing what sticks, do you tend to plan out a set of dice before you go into it, or do you just start throwing color at it?
It's definitely like yes and no. Like it's definitely both. Like I have like a like long-term projects, like techniques that I'm working on with every iteration. Like with a lot of iterations. So I'll be like, I'm trying to learn a new technique. I'm trying to like get something down. And often that just like results in beautiful dice that I can, you know, that aren't quite what I want, but still look great. So in fact, yesterday I nailed a technique that I've been working on for about 2 years. It's not like They're not ready to sell yet, but like a dripping technique, I've just been trying to figure it out. And I literally just figured it out yesterday, and I'm very excited about that. So there's going to be more of that coming up, which is great. It's a lot of work, but it's cool. But yeah, like also, like, you know, I do have days where I'm just want to chill out, and I'll just use certain styles that I like and some colors that I like, and just like, yeah, be like, yep. Watch like a movie or something and just chill out with it. But yeah, there's lots, most of the time, I'm experimenting, I think. Yeah.
And I love hearing that. I think that's so key for dice makers, especially when you're trying to find your own expression and style. And I talk about this quite a lot in my book. And people will often ask, you know, what's the perfect way to do the Petri method? And the answer is, well, yeah, there are some basic techniques, but it's really going to depend on, you know, your resin, the temperature, the types of alcohol inks you're using. And at the end of the day, you've got to figure out what works best with those variables and with your style as well. And I'm guessing that experimentation's not something we often see on Instagram. I assume they're not always as perfect as they look on there, right?
No. Well, we were just chatting briefly before the podcast, and I've made some really turd dice last night. Like I said, I cracked a technique, but that was something. But yeah, I just used some pink alcohol ink, and it's just browned load. It's like, looks like a little poo. Shiny poo. Who wants to buy a shiny poo? I polish it for you.
Hey, put it on Instagram. Someone might.
Yeah. Well, I've got like two bin bags full of them in my attic.
Now, George, you said earlier that you kind of jumped into dice making during the whole COVID thing, but are there any other mediums you've experimented in the past? Any other artistic background apart from that?
Yeah, I was a screenwriter to little success for quite a long time. So I used to be a writer. Yeah. The theatre of the mind, such. So I spent a long, long, long time doing that, trying to get into cinema. I got a few contracts, but nothing particularly exciting happened with that. But otherwise, like I said, my brother is a designer, and he's always been like, I've just been like, oh, that's cool. I've never done much art in school. So it is a strange transition from like a very purely mental creative pursuit into something that's totally physical. It was a real, like, a refreshing change for me.
And I completely understand that, you know, myself moving from a corporate job to a much more creative one. And I find when I'm making dice or doing anything artistic, there's a real zen to it, and you get into like quite a flow. Do you find that in your own work as well?
Yeah, I live for the flow. That's like the best place to be. I do. Like, I there's nothing more satisfying than that creative spark, you know. And then when something just makes sense, and it kind of be, and, you know, dice is simple. I'm not doing anything like amazing. I just feel so good. Like, I couldn't live without doing something creative. Like, I live for that feeling. It's like a total high. And that's what I got from writing for a long time. But it started to make me feel a bit crappy as well. So I was like, okay, I'm going to choose something that's kinder to me, you know?
But I'm guessing now your D&D group are really taking advantage of that writing background there with your DMing, right?
Yeah, I do love writing, because you only do about 50% of the book when you're running a campaign. The rest is you. And that moment where everything comes together and you're coming up with these funny little ideas, and it works with the group, and the group bring more to it. Like, I absolutely live for that. Yeah, I love it.
And yeah, I was chatting last week with Andy from Fighting Chance Studios, and we were talking about the fact that, you know, how incredible it is when people see your dice and their eyes kind of light up, and, you know, there's that connection, and they realize that, you know, these are the dice for me, or these are the dice that best represent my character.
Yeah, people are so sweet. Like, it's very rare that you get, but I can't recall having an unpleasant customer or like commissioner. Like, people are so like into D&D, you know. It's just such a wonderful part of their lives. There's not very much bitterness with it, and they're just wanting to celebrate it when they buy some dice, you know. It's just there's not a lot of paraphernalia for D&D either, which I'm sure Wizards of the Coast absolutely hate. Well, I know they do. But so it's like, it's one of the few things that you can really be like, you know, this is a special treat for me. So people get really excited and say really lovely things. And, you know, I do lots of commissions as well. And, you know, a lot of the time people would send me like a picture of their character and just be like, they're like this, they, you know, they dance around like this way. And I'm like, oh, cool. And like, we'll just have like this crazy back and forth where I really get to know the person who's buying the dice, and we just get some lovely communication. It's just a little peek into their lives and what they love. And it's just, I always find it really sweet and lovely.
And speaking of commissions, do you get any interesting ones that you can talk about, you know, without offending anyone or anything like
for
that?
For sure, all the time. I had a really good one recently, actually, where someone asked me to make the Filipino flag with my style. And I was like, yeah, why not? Like, it's just like, totally unique. It's hard to see how that would work in D&D, but I was just like, absolutely. It's like nice, bold colors. And you want them in my style, that's absolutely, totally fine. You know, you get some other requests that tough, and I've had to like turn down like people's like pets and stuff like that, like ashes and things,
and they mean so much to people too.
I know, I just didn't, if I messed that up, I'd feel like I'd hate myself, you know? So I haven't done anything like that personally, but like, I get it. Like, it makes sense to like keep this wonderful little item, you know?
But, as long as you get enough of it to mess up a set if you need to.
I don't know. I feel weird. I just found a bee. And I feel weird with that. Yeah, I was just like, oh, it's a perfectly intact bee. I'm going to put that on in one of my chunks.
It'll probably make a great necklace or something.
Yeah, for sure. And resin is great for that. I'm thinking of also getting into jewelry making. I think that might be a big part of it too.
I must say, I have tried my hand at making pendants, and it's a lot more complicated than it looks.
Yeah, well, I did a silversmithing class. And that was interesting. It turned out that I'm probably going to do is 3D print the base and just get the silver casts made.
Oh, that's awesome. And I think that's something I've wanted to get into for a long, long time, which is that lost wax casting. But, you know, to be honest, I think I've got every tool in the shed in terms of 3D printers, laser cutters, and, you know, all of the resin gear. And I think to a large degree, you know, that technology has been responsible for the rise of dice making in general, right?
For sure. Like, that's quite new, isn't it? It's just like, the whole dice industry exists because of 3D printers, essentially, doesn't it? Being able to make your own masters is a big deal.
Yeah, and I think the printing technology is getting better and better. The resin printers are now up to 14K, which is absolutely amazing. And even the FDM printers are getting so much better with, you know, brands like Bamboo Labs, which can print dice quite adequately, but aren't quite up to printing the details like the numbers and the finer details.
That's interesting.
And far less cleaner.
Yeah, and the horrible toxic chemicals.
And I guess like a lot of dice makers, you've had a tough time printing masters on your resin printers, right?
Yeah, they're tough. I mean, I've thrown so many hours at Blender and at my printer, and you get so many failures, just eternal. Like, I'm still not happy 100% with my masters now. And like, I think if something's handmade from the ground up, the customer knows that there'll be certain flaws, but like, I'm striving to make the best possible product I can make, you know? And so I'm always constantly revising my masters and my molds and everything, all these little things. I'm just trying to do better and better. But it's like an eternal thing.
And I think we've all been there. You've spent, you know, hours and hours on a set of masters, and you've looked at them and gone, oh, they're amazing, they're perfect. And then you've been at a show or something and looked at one of your dice and gone, oh, that corner's not as straight as it could be, right? Yeah. It's like an eighth of a millimeter off.
Yeah. Well, I just, like a D6 as well, with
they're the worst.
A non-Form Labs resin printer is an absolute nightmare to make. Like, you have to recalibrate your printer just for a D6.
And you mentioned the Form Labs printers, and I think they're making a big wave in the dice making community because, you know, for a 5-year-old printer, the Form Labs 3, it's probably starting to come down in price in the secondhand market. You know, this is a printer that's $6,000 Australian new plus, you know, $400 for a bottle of resin. But the dimensional accuracy is incredible, and you don't have to worry about things like silicon inhibition and all of that sort of stuff. I think most dice makers have probably considered it at this point.
Yeah, I think it's like, I'm at the point in with my career, I think it's worth it. Like, to pay premium for a perfect product, I'm thinking of doing it. Yeah, I've got a convention up at the end of the month, and I'm probably going to use the proceeds to just commission a perfect set of masters, and I can just never think about it again, and that would just be magical.
That's the dream, isn't it? Now, this is a spoiler for next week's episode, but I was having a chat with Doug from Hedron Rockworks, and he's an incredible lapidarist and hand facets all of his dice. And he was kind of saying that, you know, 3D printers are great and all of that, but nothing can beat the accuracy of hand faceted dice. And it kind of got me thinking whether that might be the next, you know, the next big thing in the dice making community. But obviously the cost of that is, you know, also incredibly prohibitive, and it takes up a huge amount of space as well.
I mean, I'd love to get some equipment like that. I would kill for it, but I just don't have the space. Like, it's like, we were talking about it before the podcast. I really want a big workshop now. That's definitely where I'm at.
Yeah, I think every dice maker is in the same position. And I'm also wondering too, as the industry evolves, whether we might see more dice making co-ops where, you know, people are hiring out large spaces and getting together to actually, you know, sharing that equipment and sharing that space, you know, so that we can all kind of make the best work. But yeah, that's probably a chat for another episode. Any other great dice makers you follow on the socials, George, that we should all go and check out?
Well, for dice makers for sure. Like one of my favorites is probably Yanir. I don't know how you say it.
I think something great. Like that. I actually chatted with Yanir when I was writing the book, and there is an artist spotlight in there with some of her work. It's absolutely stunning.
Yeah, she's great. Like she's been great for a long time as well. Well ahead of my journey as a dice maker. Like I already feel like I've kind of really gotten good maybe like a couple of years ago. And before that I was just like, what am I doing? You know. But she's like ever since I've started looked into dice, she's always been fantastic, I think. I love the Dice Gin, who's a UK based dice maker. Yeah, she's really good. And she was really lovely. She was very support, like helpful when I was starting out too. She actually bought one of my early D20s, like right at the beginning, which is very sweet. I mean, it's quite cool looking, but like not nearly as good as hers were at the time. And so she was really helpful and like got me invited into like a UK dice making group as well, which is very nice. Like Malevolent Dice, they're amazing. I was talking about like a little drip technique that I'd figured out. Like it's not the same as theirs. I wouldn't rip them off. But like, you know, you get inspired by people and you try stuff.
Absolutely. I think that's probably the most important thing. It's like celebrating their work.
Yeah.
And I love this. And here's my take on it.
Yeah. It's always going to be your take on it. That is exactly it. Like, I think it's really difficult to like replicate someone's like dice. Exactly.
I know, George, I've tried.
But like you inevitably, if you keep trying, you're going to come up with your own flavor, and that's the best way to do it anyway. But yeah, also Malevolent Dice does these super cool like little D6 liquid core potion bottles.
I've seen them.
I love them.
Yeah.
I think they're amazing. I've done some liquid core stuff. Yeah, I really like them. And yeah, another one. Oh, I like Dice of the Seeker as well, another UK based. She's great. Does these like big chunky D6s. Sorry.
I love Dice of the Seeker. She was showing off an incredible red dwarf dice the other day.
The Starbug in it. I was like, yeah, my wife is like completely obsessed with Red Dwarf as well. Like half of her life is just Red Dwarf quotes.
Yeah. There's probably a lot of listeners in the US wondering what the heck is Red Dwarf?
Yeah.
But they did a pilot of it in the US in the early 90s and it was absolutely terrible and they cancelled it.
It's not the first time, I guess.
Classic British comedy. Now, George, would you have any advice for anyone wanting to get into dice making? Maybe do what you did and just throw yourself in at the deep end?
I think everyone in the industry knows Ribonator. He's just does this exceptional YouTube channel, that's how I got it. You know, he really helped me understand the basics. And like the best thing about him, apart from him being really like friendly and nice vibes, is that he's willing to kind of show his mistakes along the way, which just really helps you understand how it works. So yeah, that would be my first thing with advice, definitely. But like I said, I didn't get into it because I wanted to make money from it or anything. I just did it because I really loved it. I think like that's a super important part of it, is that you've got to be passionate. And like I said as well, I was like, I just want to collect dice. I'm a magpie. And so it got to the point where it's like, this is really expensive. So I'm just going to do it myself.
Yes.
And ended up making it like significantly more expensive anyway.
It does initially. Yeah. I mean, you've got to think about the investment for the return, you know, I spend a little bit of money and I end up with 1,000 sets of dice. A little
3D printer, sorry.
Yeah, like a formal.
I probably need a really good graphics card for Blender, you know?
Yeah. Hey, George, before we finish up, did you want to tell us a little bit about your experience with Blender? Is this something that you've been working at for a while or a new thing for you?
No, it's all new, yeah. I did it, like, there's lots of great little engines you can use to do your dice now. Like, you can go on, like, a website or whatever. I can't remember what it's called, but it's really good. It's called Dice Gen, I think it is. Like, you just put your font in there and your logo and it just does it. But, like I started before I knew that was really about. So I just, did it all from scratch. I just, like, doing booleans, changing SVGs into, you know, some things. I'm not very technically minded, I'm afraid.
No, I just appreciate the interest. Like yourself, I got into Fusion 360 and 3D modeling a while back when I realized that those tools were kind of limiting what I could do. And, you know, I wanted to try out some more new and exciting things. But there's just such a learning curve with any 3D modeling tool.
Mm, it is, Blunt, but there's so much. I mean, like anything, YouTube is just the fount of all knowledge of mankind.
What did we do before YouTube?
Libraries?
Yeah. Probably showing my age there, George, but I do remember the days before the internet. You know, I'd kind of beg my mother to take me to the library where I'd sit in front of a shelf about, I don't know, lasers or whatever.
Yeah, I think I'm the same, similar age to you. Yeah, I feel your pain.
Yeah, apart from that, you'd kind of just have to figure it out, right? It's kind of life-changing now that you can jump on and there's such great resources, you know, like Rybinator. Dreamy Dice is another one. I love watching her videos.
I mean, it's the most, like, one of the most important things going. If you want to learn something, it's just amazing. If you got the time, then you can do anything you want.
George, I've had a great time chatting with you today, and I hope you have too. For all of our listeners out there who might want to, you know, reach out to you or learn more about your dice, what's the best place for them to contact you or see some of your latest work?
Just my Etsy, really, is the easiest way. I don't have my own site yet. I keep meaning to do it, but it's just Etsy. or my Instagram, you can just get in touch with me. That's fine. And I'll be doing a few conventions this year as well in the UK. So the next one's UK Board Games Expo, but I'm doing Dragon Meet in November as well. I'm hoping to do a couple of Comic-Con, manias as well.
Any shows planned in Australia, aka the Down Under Dark?
I wish.
I say exactly the same thing about the UK. I would love to do some cons there.
Look, I'd love to go. I've never been to Australia. I'd love to go.
And you absolutely should, George. We'll have links to the Chicken Wizard's socials and Etsy below. Please give him a follow. And if you can, please buy his dice. They're absolutely phenomenal.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you, George. It's been an absolute pleasure. And if you're hearing this message, you've listened to the entire episode of Talking Dice. And we want to thank you from the bottom of our hearts. We hope you enjoyed this episode. Please give us a big thumbs up and leave a review. And don't forget to check out patreon.com/talkingdice if you'd love to help us in the best way possible. And we'll catch you in the next episode of Talking Dice. Goodbye.